Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Hello, Best Ever listeners, and welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm your host for today, Paul Mueller, and we're back today with another Best Ever Midweek News Brief, where we will run through some of the week's top CRE headlines for you, then invite an expert in to discuss our top story before sending you off for your day, hopefully a little bit more informed. In today's episode, Denver is on fire, Minneapolis captivates renters, and Dallas emerges as the current king of industrial. We'll start out west in Denver, where despite its high home prices relative to the national average, Colorado's capital has taken the top spot in U.S. News' recent list of the nation's 20 hottest housing markets. A key to Denver's high ranking was its financial health subindex, as homeowners in Denver appear to be showing few signs of financial distress. In December, the mortgage delinquency rate in the Denver MSA was just 1.8%, which is half the national rate, and the foreclosure rate of 0.1% was about a quarter of the national rate. A lot of these numbers make sense as to why Denver tops this list. But for residents, the dollars make sense in Denver too. Denver residents have a high median income relative to mortgage and rent rates, with a median household income of nearly $86,000 compared to its average monthly mortgage of just over $2,200 and an average monthly rent of around $1,600. On top of that, low housing supply has kept prices elevated in Denver, even in a high mortgage rate environment. Its vacancy rate fell to 4.6% at the end of 2023, well below the national rate, while rents have risen 3.1% year over year, which is about in line with what's happened nationally. To top it all off, Denver has an attractive job market, and what all this adds up to is solidifying Denver as a desirable place for those looking to relocate. Looking beyond Denver, Virginia and the Carolinas dominated the next few spots on the list, with the Raleigh, Durham, Virginia Beach, and Charlotte markets, along with the surrounding submarkets, rounding out the top five. To see the full list, and to read more about it on Bigger Pockets, which did a great breakdown of the list, click the link in the show notes. Next, let's go to Minnesota, where according to data from Yardi's Rent Cafe, renters searched for apartments in Minneapolis more than any other market in February. it was Minneapolis's third consecutive month in the top spot on Rent Cafe's list. Apartment searches in Minneapolis grew a staggering 234% compared to February last year. On top of that, there was a 68% increase in favorited listings and a 182% surge in safe searches among Minneapolis listings. What this all indicates is sustained renter interest in Minneapolis. So if you're looking for a market with growing demand for rental properties, Minneapolis should be on your list, if not at the top. For other markets, Atlanta, Queens, New York, Detroit, and Cleveland rounded out the top five. To see if your market cracked the top 30, click the link in the show notes for the full list. Next, we'll shoot down to Dallas, where industrial is booming. Dallas-Fort Worth's industrial sector had an active year in 2023. According to Commercial Edge, Dallas led the industrial sector in terms of deliveries in 2023, with almost 61.9 million square feet delivered across 177 properties, more than doubling the average pace nationally. Dallas's total industrial inventory at the end of 2023 was 944.4 million square feet, surpassed only by Chicago with a billion square feet. But with deliveries up, vacancy followed. Dallas-Fort Worth's vacancy rate clocked in at 4.3% in December. That's a 50 basis point increase compared to January 2023, but that's still 30 basis points lower than the national average, solidifying Dallas as an industrial hotspot in 2024. So, now that we've taken a little cruise around the U.S. to look at a few different markets, it's time for our top story. Look, Denver, Minneapolis, and Dallas may be hot for their respective reasons, but on a national scale, the question investors across commercial real estate are asking themselves is, have we hit bottom yet, and is it time to start investing again? Some big players seem to think we have. Goldman Sachs said last week that it's ready to start actively investing in commercial real estate again. Jim Garman, the co-head of real estate at Goldman Sachs Asset Management, cited a combination of interest rates coming down and the fact that they're starting to see a floor in prices set by buyers who are in the market. These key factors have sparked their belief that the market has bottomed out. Blackstone is on the bandwagon too, and interest rates are a big reason why. The consensus is that rate decreases are coming, we just don't know when. Some are saying September is the ideal time, others that the election could push them up to June. But according to Blackstone President John Gray, the time to make a move is not after the rates come down, it's before. In an interview last week, he said, quote, "The fundamentals feel like they're bottoming," end quote. He went on to say that as investors, sometimes you can miss the bottom by being overly cautious, and he believes that now is probably a good time to move fast and buy real estate before rates come down. So, have we hit bottom? Here to help us make sense of it all is Logan Freeman. Logan is a longtime friend of the show. You can check out some of his previous episodes in the show notes. He is the co-founder and chief development officer of FTW Investments, where their strategy involves acquiring, operating, and the eventual disposition of large-scale commercial real estate assets. His portfolio consists of 1,500 multifamily units across four states as a general partner, plus 600,000 square feet in the office, industrial, and retail sectors. He's also a commercial broker based in Kansas City, Missouri. Logan, thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Paul. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, excellent. It's always good to see you. And I'm excited about the topic that we're here to discuss today. As I just mentioned, Goldman Sachs is ready to throw some money back at commercial real estate. It looks like Blackstone is ready to do the same. And in my research and with the different articles that I read, it seems like one of the key factors for each of those moves is the anticipation of interest rates coming down sometime this year. And you mentioned something really interesting before we started recording, and it was really the fact that there's a little bit of a myth or a misnomer among some investors that property prices are tied to interest rates. And according to you, that's not necessarily the case. I'd love to start there and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and this is research that has been completed by Dr. Peter Linneman and Chief Financial Analyst Matt LaRiva. So it's definitely not my research that I have been completed. Let me just put that caveat out there. But real estate prices are not always directly tied to interest rates. And I've caught myself wondering why cap rates remain similar across vastly different interest rate environments. For instance, think about January 2007, where we saw cap rates at 5.7% and the 10-year treasury was 4.7%. But in July of 2012, cap rates were only 50 basis points higher, despite a 300 basis point lower treasury yield. And so I think the answer lies deeper, and that's in the flow of mortgage funds relative to GDP, which can shed light on cap rate behaviors more accurately than interest rates alone. And I think that plays well into the conversation we're having around all of this capital that people have been talking about that's on the sidelines and looking to be allocated to commercial real estate. So if an investor is really interested in understanding where prices could be, it's definitely a better metric in my mind to look at where capital flows are going, because that's going to really drive certain price discovery in those markets. And typically I call this the Amazon effect, where Amazon or Google or Tesla, whenever they move their headquarters somewhere, they're moving their corporate headquarters. They've done all this research, all this analysis around, we want to be in this location. Well, after they announce, property prices and people around that, development usually spurs. We see it here in Kansas City happening around the Panasonic battery plant out in DeSoto, Kansas. You know, property prices have gone through the roof because of Panasonic building a $7 billion plant there. And so I think that's something to keep in mind here as we're trying to understand where prices might be headed, and or have we bottomed out in regards to prices? And I'm excited to talk more about that.
Thanks for that. And obviously, Goldman and Blackstone are saying that they believe, because of a variety of factors, that prices have bottomed out and that we're ready to see some type of a rebound, resurgence, however you want to label it. What this means is that they're going to be injecting a lot of capital into the CRE space here in 2024, which is a win for, I think, everybody. So what I'd love to know from you is, what have you been reading? Obviously, what I'm highlighting here is what I've seen from Goldman, what I've seen from Blackstone. What have you been reading and what have you been seeing? And do you agree that we've reached that bottom?
I think we have reached the bottom in specific asset classes, but what I'm reading and what I track pretty closely is the Green Street Property Price Index, and that's dropped 21% since the peak in March of 2021. It's now just slightly above the lowest point in July of 2021. So we've seen a subtle increase this year, believe it or not, in the property price index. Last month, it stayed really steady, but in January, it actually ticked up from December, which sort of makes a little bit of sense. And so I love to understand where that indices is, because that gives a pretty good holistic view of where prices have been historically. And so that's where we start. And then we always talk about, and every investor should be focused on, the idea that real estate is hyper local and you have to understand what your market is. But just to give you a pinpoint in time, the index is at 121.8 right now. During the free money time, I will call it, it peaked at 155. During the lowest of lows, like I mentioned, in July of 2021, it was 120.1. So I think that most asset allocators and investors are looking at a basis standpoint right now and seeing that if you have capital and courage and you have a long-term perspective, this might be a really good time to actually start making some investments into real estate.
Right. And obviously, we're not giving investment advice here. We're just calling things out the way that we see them. But I'm interested in your perspective. As an investor, what are the things that you consider when you are trying to determine whether or not we bottomed out and when the right time is to deploy your capital?
I have four different criteria that I'm always looking at, which is, what is our investment goal? What are we aiming to achieve with this investment? What's the timeline? How long are you willing to wait for a return on your investment? What's the exit strategy? Do you have a clear plan for when you're going to exit and how you're going to exit? And then the involvement level. Right now, to be involved in commercial real estate, it really has to be a really enticing opportunity because of all of the aforementioned risks that we have been talking about and the whole industry has been talking about. It's still really difficult to make a lot of deals pencils in the prior capital structures that investors have been operating in with those same return on investment expectations. So I think that there's going to be a couple things that happen. My experience and what I'm seeing right now is sellers are starting to capitulate in a sense that those prices that we were seeing 2 years ago, those may be gone. So right now, I think that still might be a good opportunity for us to sell. And so we're starting to get some people, at least on the brokerage side, to really come to the reality that those prices are gone. And they think that they might continue to go down. So that might be a pitch to property owners that are looking to unload their projects. However, I think there's a bigger kind of tidal wave, and that is the looming debt that we have all talked about. It's not just the looming debt that shows up on the headlines. We all know that commercial loans, typically, at least on the deals that we're working on, yeah, they might have a 20 or 25 year amortization period, but they're really fixed for 5 years. And then you got to reset that expectation. And at that reset, if that's coming up now, later this year, that's getting a lot of property owners thinking about, what am I going to do with this property? Knowing that it might reappraise in today's environment, not at the level that I need it to, and the financing that I have currently versus the financing I might be able to go get could be 300, 400 basis points higher. Do I want to still hold on to this property? And so all of those things, I think, are creating an opportunity for investors that are very active in their marketplaces to be having those conversations with property owners. It's very difficult to take a macro approach and apply that, an investment thesis, on the micro level because of the different situations that these property owners may or may not be in. But I'm starting to see those needles in the haystack become more numerous. And it does seem to me that, at least in our market, on the brokerage side, deals are getting penciled out. They are transacting. And those expectations for returns have been changing for investors. For us personally, I am still very focused on the commercial side, mostly on the flex industrial and retail. And in Kansas City, unfortunately for me, that space is less than 3% vacant. So it's very difficult with a property owner right now for them to sell at an 8% or a 9% cap rate. But there are other strategies that can be implemented, and or larger funds and institutions like we're talking about here with Goldman and Blackstone. They don't have the luxury of sitting on their hands anymore. They have raised $300, $400, $500 billion that need to be going and allocated. And so they are very much more looking at it as a price per pound and focused on basis right now. And that's driving a lot of activity. And once that happens, I do believe that smaller investors like myself and or mom and pop investors will start to have a little bit more price discovery and be feeling a little more confident out there to go make their investments.
We'll get back to the show, but first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
John Gray mentioned that with interest rates coming down later this year, I think a lot of people are expecting rates to come down. June is what a lot of people are saying because typically September is a great time, but with an election this year, it looks like that's going to get pushed up. And it's really anybody's guess, but June seems to be what a lot of people are keying in on. And a lot of investors are waiting to get back into the game until those rates come down, debt becomes cheaper, and therefore they have to deploy less capital in order to acquire properties. But what also happens then is competition goes up because everybody's going to take that capital that they've been sitting on and they're going to throw it all out into the market. So what John Gray suggests is that the opportunity is really before the interest rates come down. So again, in terms of interest rates specifically, how does that factor into your philosophy on when you want to deploy your capital? Or is it just something that you kind of keep a side eye on, but it's really not one of your key factors?
Obviously, we're tracking interest rates. Now, prognosticating on when they might be lowered, I've at least found it to be a failing projection exercise for us, for sure. I think, and this is my opinion, I do think that it could continue to get kicked down the road. And so for real estate investors, making decisions based on, does this real estate make sense at this basis, is kind of the camp that I am in. For a couple different reasons, there's multiple capital structures that we can go employ when looking at an investment. And I think that is similar to what maybe John Gray is thinking about right now, especially with that amount of capital. They can go close cash and have a unlevered yield of a certain amount. It's probably better than what they're getting sitting in a money market account or wherever those funds might be sitting. So for us, I'm looking at location always. I'm looking at basis, and I'm looking at the opportunity to refinance at a later point. So we have actually purchased properties with very low leverage and or all cash to make it make sense because we felt like it was a good opportunity at the basis. And that is one thing that you mentioned, Paul, was when the sentiment turns positive and interest rates are lowered, that competition, it increases drastically. And that's what we're trying to avoid, just to get out of bidding wars on a real estate, because it feels like when that was happening a few years back, it was even more difficult to find opportunities. So while we may acquire less in this period of time, I do think that there are opportunities if you're willing to roll up the sleeves and really focus on a long-term perspective. And you can tie that along with the capital that you're bringing into a project. And so that's kind of our stance on this right now, is I think that if the demand drivers still make sense, if the basis is at a good point where you feel comfortable about that, I'm underwriting retail deals at $75 to $85 a square foot in really, really great submarkets of Kansas City. And I'm seeing stabilized deals for the last 12 months sell for $140, $150 per square foot. That's attractive to me if I'm able to actually go acquire that real estate. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Unfortunately, most of these deals, and a lot of times they get structured in ways that are levered and they have to be levered to a certain point for them to make sense. That's when I think you might really need to think about, does this still make sense for me? Because we've witnessed and we are going to continue to witness the folks that have been damaged and or the deals that have been damaged by taking floating rate debt. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, but I am saying that the basis of these properties needs to make sense. And it seems like right now, where we're at July of 2021 levels, could be a really good time to start seriously thinking about getting in at a good basis on some of these properties.
Logan, you mentioned the four pillars that you have in terms of how you decide whether or not it's time for you to deploy your capital. I'm interested in how you formed those. Were there mistakes that you made or mistiming the market events that you had previously that helped you define what those four pillars really are?
Yeah, I've been investing for the last 7 years into commercial real estate, and those really have never changed. I think that for me and for our firm, it really is thinking about these projects in a longer term framework, because I have been a part of projects where have been what I'll call mistakes, and it wasn't necessarily a timing mistake whatsoever. But when you get started as an investor, you're typically getting started on smaller and or maybe less desirable properties in areas that are a little rougher sometimes. And what I would say, the evolution of at least myself in the operations side, is I'm not really willing to pay for the headache anymore. And I know what the headache is in regards to either a multifamily or a commercial property. So while they might look great on a pro forma, the execution of the operations, there's just specific types of deals that I probably would stay more away from. So right now, the investment goal, that's the number one thing, is what are we trying to accomplish with this and what needs to happen to make that goal to take it to fruition? I would say is a little more risk averse than it was previously. So I think that's a big part of maybe what our philosophy is. How do we mitigate risk? You know, how are we thinking about risk? Look, everybody's gotten a little bit older. We all have more children now. We have a little bit less time to maybe go swing hammers and roll up the sleeves at the property. So making the decision to purchase better located and or newer properties that maybe a little less on the capital expenditure side is what we're focused on. I think that's a pretty natural evolution for just about every real estate investor out there.
Yeah, definitely. And you kind of alluded to it a little bit there, but I'm interested what the biggest challenge is for you right now in your business. What's the thing that keeps you up at night that you're not sure where this is going to pan out, or the thing that you're wrestling with the most?
I think a lot of people are in this same scenario, but as a real estate investor and the way that we are structured is we're an acquisition business. And the last 2 years have been really difficult for acquisition. So if you're not doing acquisitions, then how do you continue to keep the lights on? So that's a big piece of any real estate investor's, I guess, portfolio and or thesis, is we have to have ancillary businesses and or other revenue streams to make sure that you can keep the people that you have employed and you can keep the lights on, so to speak. So the way that a lot of our projects are structured is in the early years, the limited partners in these projects are highly incentivized, and the cash flows, rightfully so, do not go to general partners outside of the capital that they have invested into the project. So if you're doing value add projects, which we did a decent amount of, and you're not quite past that point of the preferred return and kicking into the waterfall promote structure, there's not a lot of cash flow a lot of times for those projects. And these can be structured in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, acquisitions have been tough for the last 2 years. That's the thing that keeps me up at night, is thinking through, okay, when is the next opportunity going to be able to come for us to go acquire something? And that's why I guess this topic is of interest to me so much, trying to maybe look through the windshield a little bit more than the rearview mirror. I hope that I'm not being too glossy-eyed and want to have a self-fulfilling prophecy in regards to making transactions happen. But on the brokerage side alone, you know, our pipeline of active deals either being under contract, listed, or out for proposal has increased 140% over the last 2 weeks. So that seems like a pretty good metric in regards to, okay, sellers are willing to come down on their price. It'll be a little bit more, I guess, reasonable with what they're asking for. Now, the big question is, are those deals going to trade? Are they going to actually get under contract and close? And through our dispositions of our own portfolio and through the brokerage, we have 9 deals that are under contract looking to go to closing tables. So I guess that's creating a lot of positivity in my mind that might free up some more investor sentiment, and or if that continues, that could really shake out this price discovery position that we've been in and try to get some transactions going. Truly, I do believe that the third and fourth quarters are going to be better, but you have mentioned previously in this show that there's a lot of other uncertainty out there in regards to an election year. And so I did do a little bit of research in regards to understanding how election years really impact commercial real estate. And frankly, there's not really a good tie. There's not a really good correlation. However, this might be an election that's different than most that we've already have. If you track Ray Dalio and all of the different pieces of the puzzle that he is tracking, it's not just an election year. We're talking about geopolitical risk. We're talking a lot about social unrest. And I do wonder how that might impact getting transactions done. Or is everybody just so pent up and ready to do deals that exuberance is ready to be unleashed? I think that's still to be seen and to be told, but at least the markers that I'm tracking in real time are showing that deals are starting to get under contract and moving to the closing table.
So for you, Logan, does it really come down to transactions? All of this is hypothetical. It's all projections. Once transactions start to tick up and properties are trading hands and there's some momentum on that side, is that really the key indicator for you to be like, okay, we've hit the bottom. We're on the way back up now?
Well, I think so. And I think back to my experience during COVID when there was a period of time where you couldn't travel much. It was difficult to get to new locations, but that was paired with a period of time where the debt was extremely cheap to get deals done. And that's really when we made a lot of acquisitions with our firm, was there was still a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. There hadn't been a lot of deals that had transacted. It was almost like that 3-month period before people started to trade real estate. And I think that's where we're at right now. That 3 to 4 month period where Blackstone and Goldman might be going out and making acquisitions, I'm starting to see it pick back up in regards to the brokerage and the dispositions that we're doing. And right now feels like a little grace period before maybe transactions really start to really be consummated and we start to see sentiment changing. So that's the dislocation that I'm looking for. And I just kind of look back to the period during COVID-19 where that's where we made most acquisitions. And so I think that's starting to come to fruition, which is exciting. But also that's the land of what the late great Sam Zell would always say, when everybody's looking right, you have to go left. And that's easier said than done. And so I think that's what I'm trying to see here with Blackstone and Fundrise, Brookfield, and all of these different firms, is they're saying, we're going to go start making moves and starting to acquire real estate. But mom and pop and smaller owners and or smaller investors, they don't have the same data points. So they feel what they experience. And a lot of times they might not feel like they are feeling or seeing the same things that these larger firms are. So I think that might be where the disconnect is. And so I'm looking for those disconnections because I feel like that's where the opportunity lies. And it feels like right now, some people are sitting on their hands. The big guys are saying they're going to start making moves. Have they already or not? I think that they have. And I'm starting to see transactions pick back up in our marketplace, which helps me because I'm looking through the windshield on the brokerage side and talking to a lot of other folks in the trade here locally, that feels like the storm is brewing and the tidal wave is starting to get a little bit bigger. It's just how long and who's going to jump on that to ride it. And I think the first movers here, the experienced folks, are already doing transactions, Paul.
Yeah, it seems, Logan, like Q2, particularly the end of Q2, when we get into June, that time when so many people are forecasting that rate change to come in, it seems like Q2 is going to be really pivotal to see how Q3 and Q4 shake out and determine what that momentum is really going to look like. Before I get to my last question, Logan, is there any of these nuances here that we didn't discuss that you'd like to touch on before we wrap up?
Yeah, these deals can take 4, 5, 6 months. So if I'm right about this little grace period that we might be in Q2 before transactions really start to be, I guess, reported on in Q3 and Q4, it may make sense to really start to try to get deals under contract right now, knowing that they may not close until Q3 or Q4. These are large transactions and they take a lot of time. So I do think that that is something to keep in mind as an investor is forecasting that and maybe getting ahead of some of that. And I think that's the signals that we're seeing from these larger firms that they're trying to accomplish that right now. And knowing that the timetable of these deals are not like a single family home where you're closing in 30, 45 days. While that does happen, that is outside the norm in my experience. It might be a really good time to start making those calls, talking to people, seeing what's going on and seeing where prices are at currently, and try not to miss the boat, so to speak, in regards to waiting until the Fed comes out and says that, because once they do, if they do, that is when everybody's going to jump in with 2 feet. So just being right in front of that, being cautious, but being right in front of that and being open to it, I think is a really good nuance and to be a thesis to be focused on for sure.
So Logan, for those investors who have been sitting on their capital and have been waiting for the right time to deploy it, what is your best ever advice, whether they decide to jump in now or they decide to wait until those interest rates come down? For those who are going to dust off that old capital and get it back out there, what's your best ever advice to them?
Right now, I think if you haven't called those brokers that you've spoken to in a while, if you haven't talked to your investors in a while, just having those conversations is so important, because I'll tell you, having 400 plus investors now, I have people on both sides of the spectrum. It just kind of really depends on what their current perspective is and what their prognostication is of the future. And you're going to find it to be vastly different. What I've experienced in the last 2 to 3 weeks is that investors that have been in the game have felt this type of market dislocation in the past, feel more confidence right now. So they're starting to dust it off. They're starting to make calls. They're starting to get out there talking to their lenders. I had 2 or 3 mortgage brokers that I talked to the last 3 weeks that I was working on a project on say, this is the most activity we have had since during the peak of COVID. Now, they don't know if those deals are going to consummate or pencil or not, but their phones are ringing off the hooks. And I've seen similar sentiment on LinkedIn. So I think right now is the time to get ready for that next buying opportunity. And the only way that I know how to do that as an investor is to not wait and read market reports and backward looking reports from the previous quarter. It's to get out there, start having conversations, and start to really see where pricing is and seeing what debt comes in at, and potentially even looking at changing your own capital structure and trying to align your investor capital, your capital, to a different type of return expectation, because I think that's the market that we're moving into. We've had a great run since 2010, but one thing that I track very closely is the 18.6-year real estate cycle. Maybe we'll have to do a show just on that where we can break that down. But I think we have another 2 years of prices continuing to increase before something larger happens. We've got 100% bonus depreciation back on the docket. That could really influx some investor decisions and make the landscape ripe for investment. And so there's a couple different things that could be happening paired alongside an election year and geopolitical risk that's going to keep people on the sidelines regardless, because of fear that if you can look past that, stay objective, and really stick to your numbers, stick to your basis, I think it could be a good opportunity for investors the next 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, and after a couple of forgettable years, hopefully 2024 is a memorable one for all the right reasons.
Exactly, yes.
Well, thank you so much, Logan, for joining us today, for your knowledge and your perspective. As always, it's great to learn from you and speak with you. Hopefully we can have you on again soon to talk about another great topic. In the meantime, best of luck to you as you go out there, start to deploy your capital in this crazy whirlwind of a market, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
And that's our show for today. If you want to read more about the bets that Goldman Sachs, Blackstone, and others are making on what they think is the bottom of the market, click the links in the show notes. Also, we'd love to hear from you. Follow us at BestEverCRE wherever you're at on social, and let us know what you think. Has the market bottomed out? Is it time to start investing again? Also, if you haven't already, subscribe to our Best Ever weekly newsletter. We try to pack it every week with as much news, information, and education as possible so you can go about your CRE business a little bit more informed. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll receive the very next one. In the meantime, as always, thanks for being a part of the Best Ever community and have a best ever day.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the Best Ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.